Hi, I'm Veena Humpapur. I grew up in California as the daughter of immigrants from India. I've been an anthropologist, filmmaker, and a storyteller. I'm a highly sensitive person who feels strongly and analyzes everything deeply.
And I'm Misa Dason, a third-generation Harlemite who also feels at home in Berlin and LA. I'm a writer, a storyteller, and a highly sensitive woman growing into her new identity as a mother. And this is Memos from Motherhood, or I Gave Birth During a Pandemic, a podcast that tries to make meaning of bringing new life into the world during a global pandemic.
Basically, the show is for all the new parents who don't sleep when the baby is sleeping because they need to dig deep into unpacking parenthood in a pandemic.
Sometimes it can be hard to believe that you're a parent, especially when so much of your experience has been in seclusion, thanks to the COVID-19 pandemic.
The realization that you're a parent now, taking care of a whole other human life, may hit you in waves or unexpectedly during small, everyday moments. This came up in my voice memos with Misa in 2020 and 2021.
Let's have a listen.
I'm just now seeing your message. And last night, Jules and I literally had a conversation almost about this very thing, where I asked him if he felt like he saw the ways that Isaiah was growing out of his baby stage. And like, he's definitely still in the baby phase, but I was asking more of, you know, can you see where it's going to happen? Because he's definitely out of, you know, the newborn phase. And when he grew out of it, I remember feeling a little sad because he was just so cut, you know, just so small and cute. And we were looking at photos of him when he was still a newborn, you know, when he was home. And so I was asking, I was like, do you think you're going to be sad when he leaves the baby phase, you know? And, I'm in the process right now of attempting to feed Isaiah some egg yolk, and you know, it's the egg yolk is going everywhere except in his mouth right now. Yeah, you think that's funny. Anyway, so I literally just said, and basically what you said, I was like, I think I'm gonna get a little sad starting to see him, like, even when he, let's say, turns one, even though, and that's what Jules was saying, he was like, Isaiah's still gonna be a baby for a while. It's just gonna be different phases of a baby. Anyway, it's time for him to take a nap soon, but I just wanted to say, like, I totally resonate because on one hand, I'm very much looking forward to when he's a toddler, especially, you know, when I'm in the city lately. I drive Jules to work every day. On the drive there and back, you see New York City parents and children also on their ways back and forth to school, and I see like the most adorable things and it makes me imagine Isaiah. So especially when I see babies, like, you know, kids who are 2 and 3 on their, you know, miniature scooters, and I can imagine us doing that with Isaiah. So I'm looking forward to that, but I am also loving the moments when he's just snuggled up in my arms.
Hey Misa, just wanted to leave you a quick voice note about a moment with Ahilan that's been staying with me this week. A couple days ago, I was carrying him up high, so we were cheek to cheek, and it was just this really cozy moment, and I realized I could feel his breath on my face, and that really struck me because, you know, it wasn't like a little bit of breath from a tiny little baby. It was regular breathing, and it just really clicked with me in that moment that here is this whole other human being. And it's not that I hadn't seen that, but it's just I felt like I could fully see that beyond Ahilan just being my baby and my child, just him being this whole other human being when I felt his breath on my face. And it made me think back on other times I've been focused on his breath when he was a newborn. Maybe even after he was a newborn, but in his infant stage, I remember going and sticking my finger under his nose because I wanted to make sure he was breathing. And I remember that I would also stare at the baby monitor after he had gone to sleep just to make sure his tummy was rising up and down to make sure that he was still breathing. So there was kind of a transition here from thinking about him breathing in terms of him being safe and healthy, and just like thinking about Sid's wrists and things like that, to the sense of just feeling his steady breath on my face and just realizing that my child is his own full person. It's like I know that intellectually, but in that moment, I really felt it, and there was something so beautiful about that. So I wanted to mention it to you. I was wondering if you've ever had a moment like that with Isaiah.
Speaking of babies, I've been having a moment lately with Isaiah. You know, even though he's very much a toddler, he turns 18 months officially tomorrow. And I've been having these moments, Vina, where I'm just thinking, I've been thinking to myself, I am going to miss this phase, this baby toddler phase. You know, one, I was thinking about, he's not a baby. He's very much a toddler, but he's so much a cute baby toddler. You know what I mean? And even though this is a very labor intensive and at times very stressful period in terms of parenting and mothering, this age range, I am also very much aware how much I'm going to miss it, you know? So I'm trying to find ways to balance, you know, being kind to myself where I'm like, this is too much. I need a break, because that's real. And at the same time, when I'm able to really try and be fully present to these moments with him, because they are not going to come back, and they are a very unique and special time. And I'm also loving it. And I realize that I am going to miss it too.
That understanding that you're bringing a new life into this world may start to sink in during your second trimester of pregnancy, once you're past the uncertainty and discomfort of the first. Many say the second trimester is the easiest one, relatively speaking anyway, and you begin to see and feel the baby in various ways.
Your belly is visibly growing, and people can see that you're pregnant now. Your baby starts kicking, and during your mid-pregnancy ultrasound, that image on the screen, which usually just looks like a blob, actually seems more baby-like.
You might start making plans for a life with a baby at this point, including the fun ones to mark this transition into parenthood. Maybe you celebrate with a baby moon or start thinking about creating a registry. For Vina, the experience of the second trimester took place mostly before the Safer at Home order, so most of this rings true.
On the other hand, for Misa, it wasn't just the baby that was becoming more real. During her second trimester, COVID-19 became understood as a real threat in the United States, particularly in New York City. Next in our live conversation, Misa and I talk about our contrasting experiences in our second trimesters.
Recording in progress.
For me, first trimester was so dominated by our concerns about genetic issues and Ahilan's safety, and then third trimester was all about COVID, and I'm like, what happened? Second trimester. One thing I do remember being really difficult for me is getting very emotional about my dog. Like, not to sound totally corny, but like to opening up our hearts to this little dog and then just start adjusting our life in terms of having to think of someone first. I think that also was a catalyst in being ready to have kids. And I remember when I was pregnant, people frequently telling me, you're not going to love your dog as much after your baby is born. Mm. I definitely don't love him less, and I don't understand why people say that. It's harder to take care of him, and he does get in the way sometimes. And him and Ahilan, like, behave very similarly, which makes me wonder how much Ahilan is, like, learning from Jamun. After we got our dog, all these people in our neighborhood or wherever we would go would suddenly start talking to us. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking when I was pregnant, like, oh, I wonder if it'll be like when we got Jamun, when all of a sudden we had this thing in common with other people, with other animal lovers. And I'm like, maybe it'll be like this after we have a kid too. Mm-hmm. Tangent aside, second trimester, I remember like it got a little bit dark because I would just think about how much I loved my dog and thinking about how he wouldn't be with us forever. Mm. And I know it was a pregnancy thing because when I hit third trimester, those thoughts dissipated. So that's like a totally random pregnancy symptom I haven't heard from anyone else before, mm-hmm. but that is one of the things I remember during second trimester. The other thing I remember is I didn't have a strong sense of what type of birth that I wanted, and I kept feeling like I hadn't prepared for a test or something because people seem to have such strong opinions about what type of birth you should be having, mm-hmm. including people who like don't have kids, never want to have kids, like still felt like they could chime in. I felt like I was supposed to have some sort of gut feeling, but like I didn't.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, I distinctly remember touring the hospital, like seeing the place and meeting up with a bunch of people in downtown Culver City afterwards for mm-hmm. dinner. And people like started discussing epidurals, and it was like, oh, of course you're going to have one, right? Like, and just this presumption being made, and me thinking like, hey, I'm the pregnant woman here who just like toured the hospital. Like, why don't you ask me what I want and what I'm thinking instead of assuming that you know and having these conversations? Yeah. I was just like, okay. I remember like not even saying anything. So I was like, I don't want to say what I'm thinking because I'm afraid, not afraid of your judgments, but like more like, mm-hmm. I don't want to waste my energy listening to your judgments.
Yeah.
If there are any, I don't even have the energy to like, if you feel bad, if you realize like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I'm like, I don't even have the energy to deal with your emotions with yeah, that.
Exactly.
The way I actually ended up making the decision was by reading about a lot of other women's experiences online. And then I remember reading some where they were like, I decided to try to go unmedicated because I'm just like a really intense person and wanted to see what this intense experience was like. And I remember that kind of clicked with me because I'm like, yeah, I am really intense too. But I know this is who I am. So I remember that being the thing that kind of like swayed me more towards, let me try to plan for unmedicated. But if I can't do it, or if it just doesn't mm-hmm. seem like the right decision, then like I'll think about pain management and whatever else.
Yeah.
But it was just that, like reading women's stories.
You're just like, yes, I'm intense. Here we go.
And then the last thing I can remember from second trimester is picking Ahilan's name. You know, doing the ultrasounds didn't make the baby more real to me. And then also like Ahilan started kicking much later than I expected. So I didn't even have that kind of like dose of reality. Though even when he started kicking, I don't know if that still even like made me totally connect with the fact that there was a baby coming. But picking his name did. I remember once he had a name and once we would refer to him as Ahilan, he started to become a little bit more real to me. Towards the end of my first trimester, they had done a bunch of extra testing and I actually found out that he was going to be a boy fairly early on. And even though I mm-hmm. spent all this time telling you that I didn't want to put any pressure on my child or have them fill some sort of hole within me, I think like a little piece of me still wanted a daughter to be able to give her the things that I hadn't had growing up, or I'm like, I felt like I could give this to a girl. Mm-hmm. So when I found out I was having a boy, I was really, really upset. And I just had the sense of like, will I be able to like really connect to him? I'm so like woman oriented within my family and within my friendships. And I remember sitting around the dining table. We still had one then because Ahilan's toys hadn't taken over. And I remember sitting between my sister and Keishin and just crying about it and being like, oh, well, what if he's like this one man I don't like in our family? Like, what if he acts like him? Like, what if he is a mansplainer? Just like going down my list and them just like taking me very seriously and, you know, consoling me. And then I remember like Yishin being like, you love the show Stranger Things. Those are all little boys in it. And you think they're adorable. And be like, oh yeah, okay, maybe he'll be fine. Maybe he'll be cute like those kids. At some point, one of them was like, well, you know, like you're probably really well equipped to raise a feminist son. So maybe like you're meant to have a son. Oh. And I remember just like kind of like perking right up when I heard that, like surprisingly fast. And I kind of like fell into this wholeheartedly and I loved that. And I still love that. I thought I would be really upset for a long time, but I moved past that fairly quickly. And then in terms of his name, I feel like I basically named him after myself in like three different ways. My grandfather had wanted to name me Prema, which is my middle sister's name, but my dad had insisted on naming me Veena. And he named me after the goddess of wisdom and learning and creativity. And if you see her, she has, oh, there's a picture right in front of me. She has four arms. Her last two arms are holding an instrument called a Veena. So that's where my name comes from. So it's a musical instrument, but it's also kind of like one in the same with the goddess. And so I wanted to name Ahilan similarly. And so Ahilan means worldly and knowledgeable. And then for his middle name, it's Murali, which means flute. And so this is why, again, I say I like, basically named this kid after myself, because I'm named after a musical instrument, and so is he. But the flute is also symbolic of another god, Krishna, and Kishan is named after Krishna. And then for his last name, people also seem to have like really strong opinions about how people should be naming their kids. And there are multiple people who ask me like, oh, don't you think like he might feel weird if he has a different last name than you and Kishan? But I actually have a different last name from my parents. Names have changed in my family a lot. Like my last name is the name of my grandfather's village. Like in my family, some women have kept their original last names. Some of them have taken their husband's last names. Some of them have taken their husband's first names, which is common from where we are in India. So it's really a mix, and it didn't seem like a big deal. Ahilan's last name ended up being a combination of our first names. I feel like we both have like a strong connection to our first names because we were named with a purpose. And then the last piece of that is, so Kishan is a first name, but it can also be a last name, and it can also be part of a last name. But it's usually pronounced Kishan. But whenever I've heard Kishan as a suffix in a last name, the piece that comes before it is usually a male name or referring to a male god. And so in this case, we were putting my name before his, right? So it's putting like a goddess's name, putting a woman's name before his.
How did your families respond to the last name?
You know, no one has had a reaction. Like, literally no one has said anything.
Really? Like, one way or the other?
No. The only people we've had comments from are friends. Or when we're in the hospital, I remember doing, like, the birth certificate stuff with the person who comes and does that with you. And I remember her saying, like, I see people do all sorts of things, and sometimes they think it doesn't work, but I think in your case it works. And we're like, oh, okay, cool, you know. You know, maybe in the next generation they'll change their last names again, and that's fine. But if they don't, like, the romantic in me just, like, loves that Veena is with Kishan. You know what I mean? So that's how it came to be.
I love that story.
That was my second trimester in a nutshell. Like, I went from my dog to to my name. But I know you had a very different experience, because in your second trimester, is that when COVID came on the scene?
Pretty much. I mean, I just want to say also, just as a comment, like, I love that your second trimester was full of emotions. I love the whole story. Like, you went through so many different feelings that I think a lot of people go through. But I really love the intentionality of how you thought about how you want to name your child, and also about how naming made him more real, more so than an ultrasound or kicking, which I also agree with. So we had planned our baby moon to happen in March during Jules' spring break, because he's a teacher. I was so excited about it, Veena. We were going to go to Barbados. And I remember at the beginning of March, conversations with family members, namely my mom and Jules' parents. They were like, are y'all still going to Barbados? And we were like, yeah, we're going. Everybody's being alarmist and la la la. I think even a week before we canceled, you know, I checked in with my host just to say, hey, I just want to let you know that we are still planning on coming to Barbados, because we had booked an Airbnb. And I said, at the same time, I am pregnant. I'm monitoring the situation, and if anything has to change, we'll let you know. But right now, we don't think that anything's going to change. I literally wrote that to her a week before everything changed on our end. And, right? And then I remember on the 13th, I had a physical therapy appointment. I remember talking to my physical therapist. We were both talking about COVID in the news, and we were both agreeing that we felt like it was our entertainment media being sensationalistic. And I was like, I'm still going to Barbados. And she was like, yeah, you better still go to Barbados. And then, Vina, by the end of that night, I remember canceling our Airbnb reservations because I got the news about Italy shutting down. I was just like, nope, nope, nope. Like, it just didn't seem like it was the right thing. Right. But when I tell you that we were heartbroken and that I was heartbroken and that we still questioned whether or not we made the right decision, and we did not stop questioning ourselves until we found out about family friends of ours. Their honeymoon was supposed to be in Italy. Italy closes borders, so they decided to go to Hawaii, and they got COVID.
Okay.
And so it was only until we heard that that we were like, okay, we made the right decision. And, you know, and I just think, you know, just talking specifically about the second trimester, so much of the first half of my second trimester was just us figuring out, okay, because we couldn't go to Barbados, but Jules was still on break, and Jules's parents were out of the country. They were supposed to come back in March, like right around the time that everything started shutting down, and their flight was canceled by Air France. And so when they were supposed to be back, they weren't. And so Jules and I said, okay, well, let's still try and put ourselves in a vacation feeling, even though the world seems to be on fire all of a sudden. So we went to their house out in Long Island. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were there for 2 weeks, I want to say. No, we were there for a week and a half. And it was really great to get out because while we were there is when the news started pouring in, you know? Mm-hmm. And it started looking really scary. Just everything just happened very quickly. Jules' school, Amelia was going on remote. My mom's a nurse, and even though she was retired, she was still at times working for a nursing agency. So the nursing agency was calling her, and she was feeling conflicted. My mom is a good nurse. She loves nursing, and she also does nursing from a sense of responsibility to her community, you know? Mm-hmm. So I remember being very worried because I was like, Mom, you need to stop. You need to say no. But my mom lives like 16 blocks away from where the hospital was. And I remember feeling doom and dread and guilt being in Long Island. And I remember having this feeling of like, my mom needs to come out here with us, right? Mm-hmm. I have not lived with my mom since I was 25. But Vina, I felt it imperative that my mom come back out with us. Mm-hmm. And it also didn't help that one of my aunties called me, who's a doctor. And she was like, you need to take your mom out of the city. Like, she didn't even know where I was, but she was like, take your mom out of the city because I know your mom. She is going to work and she needs to not work, you know?
Oh my goodness.
And so Jules and I went back to the city, and we basically, Vina, like, we temporarily relocated. That was my second trimester. I wish we had taken a picture of it. Like, it looked like we were moving. We packed up this whole car. Mm-hmm. Then we rented another car to pack up with more stuff and to also drive my mom out because we didn't have enough room for all three of us.
Yeah.
The point is, Vina, like, it was a whole production, but it felt like it was imperative that we leave the city. Yeah. And I felt a lot of guilt and conflict around it because I was aware of the fact that so many people in my life and in my neighborhood did not have the privilege mm-hmm. or access to a second home outside of the city. And we lived in a 6-building apartment complex. And in that short time, like in those 2 weeks between being out here, then being back in the city, and then going back out, we had gotten reports of people, at least one person in each building, already dying of COVID.
Oh my God.
You know, and there's 16 floors, and I want to say there's 13 units in each building. And our building management was super slow to responding to the situation. It felt like people in our neighborhood were slow to, like, believe that the pandemic was real.
Yeah.
because I remember, like, let's say the 13th is when we canceled. We went grocery shopping on Friday, and we went grocery shopping trying to not grocery shop for the next 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So we had a shopping cart with us, and I remember it's like 7 blocks from our apartment to the grocery store. And I remember we were walking down the main avenue, and it was a Friday night, Vina, and every bar and restaurant was packed to the hilt. It was like Friday night, happy hour, fun. And we felt like we were in a twilight zone because here we are with our big ass, you know, with our shopping cart. We just did panic grocery shopping. You know, we literally were like, we are not trying to go back into the grocery store for the next 2 weeks.
So at that point, was everything still in the grocery store?
Everything was still in the grocery store. We were able to find everything. I mean, there were more people shopping, but I think that we responded quicker than most in our neighborhood.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there were still things in the grocery store and there was just regular shopping, but you could tell that there were other people in the grocery store like us who were like, oh shit, it's about to go down. Mm-hmm. But there were also a lot of people who were just in line with like their 5 items, like dump da dump da dump.
Wow.
I know. And so as we're walking back home, like, oh my goodness, we don't know what's happening, but shit is going down all around us in our neighborhood. Everyone was like, it's Friday night, you know, happy hour drinks.
Whoa.
So that just like added to our sense of we need to get out of here because we're living in a neighborhood right now that doesn't get it, you know, and our building management doesn't get it and they're not protecting the doorman. They're not protecting us. We got to go. And so unfortunately, my second trimester was dealing with how to manage my anxiety. And I remember my doula was basically affirming. She was like, get out of the city if you can. Get all the essential oils. She was like, buy a diffuser. Stop listening to the news. You know, she just like gave me a list of things to do. And it was all Operation Stay Calm. Mm-hmm. And it worked, you know. But what really helped is that I did not listen to the news because the news is how I spun out. Anyway, I'll stop there, but I just feel like my second trimester was spent in isolation. You know, it was my mom and Jules. And I have to say, Jules and my mom and I lived together for 7.5 weeks. And it worked. And it was a big experiment because I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. It was very calming for me because what I realized was what I remember saying to myself at the time and what I realized is that I didn't know if I was having a daughter or a son. I was like, I want my child to know my mom.
Yeah.
And that was just very clear to me. And I don't think I would have articulated as clearly like that if it hadn't been for COVID. But I was so concerned about her well-being because I wanted her to be around for my child. Right. And that is what compelled me and I remember, you know, you can't tell my mom what to do. But the way that I convinced her, I was like, Mom, I was like, I would like you to consider trying out staying with Jules and I for a week out in Long Island. And I said, and I promise you, if you do not feel comfortable doing that, we will drive you back. Mm-hmm. And I said, but can you at least just consider giving us a try for a week and then seeing how that goes? And so she was like, okay, I'll think about that, you know? And so she tried it out for a week and then it ends up being 7 weeks. And I think it's what I needed because, and you know, and also I should say during that time, my dad got COVID. I actually called an ambulance for him. His breath was very labored and it was like, okay, we need to call an ambulance, you know? And so then the next 10 days, I ended up being the point person. And, you know, it was a time where hospitals just got hit. So you only got one phone call a day from a doctor. You didn't know when it was coming. And if you missed the phone call, it was not certain that you would be able to reach anyone again afterwards. You know, I couldn't really do too much about my dad once he was discharged because everyone was like, stay away. You know, you are pregnant. We need to protect you. That was April. So it was a very stressful time. And it was a time also that between my mom and me, there were a lot of people in our networks who were getting COVID, who were getting hospitalized for COVID, and who were dying of it. But it also was really nice to have my mom with me, you know, during that time.
And it really calmed me down during that time in my second trimester to basically have my partner and my mom and to know that my dad was taken care of. Sorry, I didn't mean to go on so long, but...
No, I feel like I was kind of like holding my breath. You thought you were going to be in Barbados and instead you're trying to protect yourself, your partner, you know, take care of your parents, take care of the baby. Like, that is a lot happening in a very short period of time. I was also noticing like how you knew like all the dates and I'm like, wow, that was really, really packed in there. It's still, I think, like such a trip to remember that time.
Yeah.
Just like, wow, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still hard to believe, like a couple years later.
Yeah.
I remember hearing a little bit about COVID in the news. I would listen to The Daily on my way to work. But the first time I really remember kind of registering it is Keishan's family lives in Singapore and they weren't able to get access to masks. So they had asked Keishan to ship masks from here and he couldn't find any because they had already been sold out. Mm. But this was even before we had an inkling that COVID was a big deal.
Mm.
Like I remember hearing about San Francisco shutting down and thinking like, oh, is that necessary? It didn't really click with me that this was going to be an issue here. It's hard for me to remember quite when it did. And I have this specific memory of being on the train home and someone like coughing right next to me and feeling like kind of like, is this okay? Like not wanting to offend them, but sort of moving away. So I must have had some inkling of it, but it took like a minute for it to click. I do remember talking to my OB and being like, should I be working from home? Is it safe for me to be going into the office and taking public transit? And not even really wanting to reach out to her because I didn't really want to work from home because I was like, oh, I'm going to be on maternity leave and then I'm going to be like at home for a while. So I don't know if I really want this, but just feeling like, oh, I should be responsible and ask her. And then being kind of surprised when she was like, yeah, if you can work from home, you should do that. So I started working from home like a week before everybody else because my doctor had told me to do so. Our baby Moon was supposed to be to Hawaii, and then we ended up needing to reschedule it because of Keishan's schedule. And then we couldn't reschedule it because then COVID was on the scene. And then I remember thinking like, okay, we'll just go to Palm Springs. We'll just splurge and get like a nice room and at least it'll be like some time away. And booking that and then that also getting canceled. So there were little inklings of it, but it wasn't totally clicking with me. And Keishan and my dad and sometimes my sister were spending the weekends painting our house. And my mom was in India, so my dad would try to cook things for me at home, and then he would bring it to me on the weekends where he would just, like, paint all day. And I remember just, like, actually even, like, really needing that food because I was just so tired and just being, like, glad that I was getting this, like, quote-unquote mothering from my dad who was, you know, making me these meals and then painting my house every weekend. And then getting a sense, like, oh, like, does mom know that this is going to be a big deal? Like, she needs to come back.
Yeah.
So at that time, she changed her flight last minute because she had found out that if she didn't leave India right then, she wouldn't be able to leave the country at all. So I think it was like within that day, like she just like went home, packed her stuff and then like headed to the airport. And then I was telling her, yeah, I was telling her about Tom Hanks and what's his wife's name? Rita Wilson.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to like drive home to her that she needed to wear her mask. And I remember her being like, oh, yes, I'll like wipe down the seat and being like, okay, great. But like also wear your mask. And then just like her having all these things that she was going to do to be like very sanitary and clean. And me being like, okay, also good. But like, please do not take your mask off because it's a really long flight, right? You're traveling pretty much a whole day. And so she was able to make it out of India. And then also Keishan's parents were in Singapore with his brother's family. And they wanted to come back too. So I remember like, and they did. And this just being kind of scary for both of us because them traveling such a long distance on the plane and we didn't know, you know, how bad things were we're going to get. Hearing your story and the bits and pieces about how you all started to put this together, like, I'm remembering those details a little bit more now. And like both of our stories, I see this sense of like, okay, gotta be safe, the baby, having certain restrictions, pregnancy, and then also having family be okay. Though, of course, like your story, that's much more intense with you being in New York City and your dad catching COVID and having to go to the hospital. I can't imagine having to deal with that while pregnant.
Yeah, it was insane. I don't think I've still really fully processed it because it just was so much happening so fast, so quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also in between all of this, still having to do things like my 20-week ultrasound, you know?
Yeah.
Because there was still like, COVID doesn't change your due date. The thing that was worrisome in the beginning for a while, they were recommending for birthing people to basically labor by themselves. Mm-hmm. I remember having a moment when I heard that where I kid you not, Vina, I was like, I'm giving birth at home. I was like, I will be damned if I go into a hospital without Jules. Yeah. And I actually knew a woman where her partner and her decided for her to birth by herself because they had a 2-year-old. The way that family members were exposed because of their jobs, they felt nervous about putting their 2-year-old in the care of family members who they knew couldn't quarantine. Oh. And some people had to do that. And I just remember being, that was something I was terrified about, you know, especially because I was aware of all these statistics around the Black maternal health crisis, the mortality crisis. So I was just like, this cannot happen. You know, I have to have my partner. But also I was like, I have to have my partner because I'm scared, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the 20-week ultrasound was at the end of March. And so Jules couldn't come with me.
Yeah.
And I had a really horrible experience actually with the technician. And I do think race was a part of it. So like on top of all the COVID stuff, being anxious about going inside anywhere. Yeah. But then to on top of all of that, have this technician who did not treat me well. So that's something that I think about too, is just still having to stay on top of my prenatal care, you know, in the midst of COVID.
Yeah. And it's just like, I remember my visits were mostly virtual. I only came in for the most necessary ones that my OB wanted me to do. So I also was taking my blood pressure at home and sending it to her weekly. And I remember my OB was on the second floor. And then right after this order took place, where I just stayed home, they moved OB up to the 4th floor. And I remember thinking, like, why did they do this? Like, I'm not getting in the elevator and you want me huffing and puffing all the way up to the 4th floor. I had an N95 mask. I remember wearing that. It was already hard for me to breathe because of my nasal congestion during pregnancy. I had one glove on because I didn't want to touch anything. But I remember, like, trudging up these stairs, just being scared of running into anyone in the elevator.
Right.
They took my temperature outside, all good. And I had to go with that Keishan, right? And then going in, and maybe there were like an assistant, but I remember them insisting I take off my mask so I could get my temperature taken. And I remember trying to explain to them, like, no, they actually already took my temperature, so I don't want to take off my mask. And then I remember, like, I had to take off my glove, too. And I remember trying to explain to her, like, no, I'm wearing the mask and the glove. And then her, like, yelling at me and being like, well, you need to wash your hands well instead of just wearing a glove. And me trying to explain, like, no, it's just because I was walking up these flights of stairs and I didn't want to touch all the handles, so I'm wearing this glove. Like, please don't make me take off my gloves and my mask. And then me ending up taking off my mask and sitting there for a while without my mask and just like kind of feeling really panicked that I was in a hospital with this woman right by me and me not wearing my mask. And I don't know if she felt bad about it or felt guilty about it, but I remember like after a couple minutes, she was like, okay, fine, you can put it back on. And I just remember just how brusque she was. And I remember going back downstairs afterwards and feeling like I had already failed as a mom, because I was like, why didn't I push back more? Why didn't I refuse to take off my mask? Like, why did I let her do that to me? And I remember just like hitting really hard because I was just physically exhausted, scared, not knowing what was happening and getting yelled at for trying to take these precautions.
I'm sorry that happened.
As you mentioned, like your bad experience. And I remember this one. I'm just like, God, like, just alone, these things are a lot.
Yeah.
And then you're like, these are just like little tiny points in a much bigger story that's still going on.
Yeah. I can't really say what the end of my second trimester was like, you know, because it was all still very much overshadowed by COVID in terms of, oh, that's the one thing I will say that, and then I can end, is just that I do remember that the thing that I was holding on to, that people kept on telling me, they're like, well, luckily your due date is in August, mm-hmm. and maybe, you know, things will have peaked by then. So let's not worry too much just yet about your birthing time, because let's just get through this time, you know? So that was the mantra, kept on being, you know, pushed to me, and that I was trying to remind myself was just like, okay, well, let's just take it one day at a time and let's just see where the numbers are at and, you know, those type of things. So
yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I think Kishan brought this up like maybe 2 weeks ago, where we're just like, oh God, every day is the same. So boring. Wish we could go somewhere, like all this stuff, right? He was like, you know, what's crazy is one of the last things I remember doing before we became isolated at home was going to our birthing class. Mm. And we had just started it. And in our first session, there was a woman there who was a dancer, and she was like, you know, very visibly pregnant. And there was a part in our class where I forget why the teacher just wanted us to dance. Maybe she just wanted us to let off some steam. But I remember us all just kind of like awkwardly sort of like being like, all right, fine, we'll dance, and like half-heartedly dancing. And this one woman who was the dancer, like, mm-hmm. got in the middle and started breakdancing. And all of us were like, oh shit, like, how is she doing this? And then Keisha and I were like, we're laughing because he's like, can you believe that's one of the last things we saw before like the safer at home order went into place?
Oh, that's awesome. I would totally be like, wait, what?
Like when we think back, it just feels so absurd that that's one of the last things we did in real life, just watching this woman dance.
I think that's a great memory. Yeah. Have, you know, the things that are possible that you don't think, you know? Thanks for listening to our show. We're on Instagram at Memos from Motherhood, but the main way to get in touch with us is to drop us a note or voice memo at memosfrommotherhood@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Memos from Motherhood is produced by Misa Dason and Vina Hampapur. Vina also edited this show. A big thanks to Jules Hollander for composing the intro music for our show. If you like this show, please rate and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Until next time, bye.